Hey, hey, geeks. Welcome back to the Mini PC Show podcast. This is Eric Ardini, the manager, hosting tonight. This is episode 40, the big 4-0, first show of the new year, 2017. We've got a full house tonight. We've got some new guests. We've got some new emails. And we've got probably some new hardware to talk about, and some broken hardware, I'm sure, too. So without any further ado, I will start letting you guys name yourselves, starting from my left. Go ahead. You guys can't tell who's to my left, can you? Brian, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, Eric? Glad to be here. I'm very blessed that I'm capable of being here with the new year. So thank you for having me on once again.
Thank you for being back. The new office is working out great for you, man. You're sounding good. You're showing up for the show. It's everything. He's got his man cave kicking. It's nice.
I'm loving it. Yeah.
He showed me some pictures while he was in the process of rebuilding this thing, and I'm ashamed to show him any pictures of what I'm working out of here. He's got me very jealous. But the black tubing in the back is a common property between your studio and mine. That I've got like 12 video cables running through that to a DVR for my security system.
Hmm.
One that's behind your left ear in this frame.
This right here?
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, I thought that was attached to your wall back there. That's actually on your mic stand. Okay. I've got the six inch version of that running down one of my walls.
That's my makeshift pop screen.
No, it looks good. Purple, too. Purple. Are you a Lakers fan? Pink.
I am not.
Okay. There's a yellow tie on the back of it, too. So got a theme going there.
Oh, yeah.
And Richard Hughes, how are you tonight, sir?
Doing good in the Hughes Compound Southern Command here.
Where it's probably about 70 degrees warmer than here. We were negatives in the temperatures today, Richard.
Oh, then it was probably 80 degrees or 90 degrees warmer than where you are.
That's very Southern Command-ish. Do you ever go Southern Commando?
No.
Wrong show.
I thought this was Jeff Halish, so I'm sorry. And last but not least, the man, the door, the legend, Mr. Steve McLaughlin, Door to Door Geek. How are you doing, sir?
I'll just say, Eric, personally, again, people complained about 2016. Really? I mean, no. So far, 2017 started out quite bad in the McLaughlin household. Time will tell, because it could just be, you know, me being a little bit overdramatic, but time will tell. But no matter what, I'm happy to talk to you guys.
Right on. Right on.
Amen.
And I'm really seriously considering buying one of those Odroids XU4.
Are they like $75?
They were a little bit pricey, but I'm seriously, because here's the whole thing. I keep thinking about a Banana Pi Pro replacement for my own cloud, switching over to Nextcloud, and I don't want to use the upboard for it. You know what I mean? That's like putting a Porsche engine in a lawnmower. I mean, you know, you don't want to do that, in my opinion.
See, I haven't been using my upboard in the last couple of weeks because I've got my laptop plugged into everything on my desk, and I'm kind of annoyed that I haven't been using it because I enjoy it so much.
Yeah, it's definitely the kittens purr, cats purr, dogs whisper, cats meow. Yeah, sure, something like that. I don't know. I'm a little out there. But Eric, really quick, you said we have emails?
Oh, no, I take it. It was a Google Plus post.
I was going to say, you are such a better person than I.
Yeah, I'll do a search real quick for email. Hey, I dusted off my Raspberry Pi 2 and got my Pi, what is it called? Pi Drive? No, I'm using Pi Drive, yes. And Retro Pi going and played some games. Good to see the old original Frogger. I've never been into the whole retro emulators or anything like that. So I wasn't sure what MAME was, even, you know. Well, now I know what MAME is. It's definitely all of, if anybody's going to set up RetroPie, it's like a video game system you can run on a Raspberry Pi 2. I think probably a Raspberry Pi 3 also, but I can't be for sure on that.
Oh, you can run it on the cheapest, the lowest, the thing you can imagine in the universe. It just might not run well. MAME stands for Multiple Arcade Machine Emulation. MAME is what can typically play any arcade game from the beginning of arcade machines up through the 90s, probably.
Yeah, and it's really neat because you can tell it's coded straight out of those arcade games. You got to insert coin by pressing a button, and then you get your one player, two players up. I mean, most of the people who are listening to this show are like, Eric, whatever, dude, you're dumb. We've been doing this forever. But some people may not have, and I'm impressed. Now, there are some funky Japanese stuff that borderline on probably illegal to even play, not because they're pirated or anything like that, but a couple of them slipped into my Raspberry Pi, and I probably don't have a license for them from buying them on Atari or something in the past, but they're weird and probably not rated R even. Strange.
Well, wow. Socially and culturally, they are different people.
Yes.
And it shows in those games.
Yeah, and they were, you know, you can tell it was taken straight out of an arcade or something, but it's just weird, just different. There's some good repositories for lots of different titles, I would say. It's nice.
Yeah, so I'm going to pull a Mark Cockrell from Android App Addicts, which is another show on the network. I'm going to steal one of his lines, mm-hmm. Eric, if you don't mind, and I'm going to ask everyone, does anybody have any hardware news?
I watched Levin TV, and he's got a studio, and he's got a fireplace. It's just a TV, you know, but in the fireplace mantle kind of thing. And I always thought that was a real cool thing, and I just looked it up, and sure enough, there's a Raspberry Pi loop video, blah, blah, blah. Basically, you just have to do the video clip, and you can have something loop it. So I was thinking about just doing that at my home, putting a, you know, fire on the TV, you know, a fireplace on the TV, because we keep talking like, oh, it'd be great if we had a fireplace, you know, in Florida when it's 80 degrees in January.
Isn't that why you get a Fire TV stick?
Dude, little mini PC humor.
I'm sorry if I mentioned this before on this podcast, but when I was getting an apartment in Louisiana, they were like, oh, but if you go there, they don't have a fireplace. I'm like, what?
It's weird that you bring this up, Richard, because I've been shopping for electric fireplaces, but I want one with an infrared heater built into it that blows out the front.
Yeah,
that'd be nice. We've got a gas log in our fireplace now, but the chimney's kind of funky, I guess, and my wife's doesn't feel secure using the gas log. Plus, it's kind of stinky and stuff. So we've been looking at electric fireplace replacements. But they do sell some inserts with, you know, a kind of a, you know, like a LED flashes inside these logs and then some spattering of lights twinkling behind.
Yeah, you want some heat coming out of it. Well, and tell you the truth, I think this weekend we're going to get colder, but the pool area is screened in, but I got one of those fire pit in a table type things. So
is it gel?
You know, it was like 50 degrees and we're out there. So that was
gel
nice.
Stuff you use? Or is it?
No, just logs. I was using logs.
You could get a Fire Stick TV and just install a Yule Log app on that.
I mean, that's
probably really easy.
Yeah, well, I got a couple of Fire Sticks. I mean, the girls have them. My wife has it in her office, and my daughter has it in her bedroom. And great product. You know, just really good product. In fact, I've got two Rokus. Been very happy with those. The Fire Stick is real nice. I like the voice integration. One of the things I didn't realize, because, you know, the Fire Stick will work with your phone also. My Vizio TV, the YouTube, I can select something on YouTube and say, you know, play on my TV. I was shocked. I didn't realize my Vizio TV had that kind of functionality.
Oh, so your smart TV with just the smartness of it has like a Chromecast ability. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, let me try. I'm like, holy cow, it came up.
I took my old Nexus 7 2012 edition to work and had it sitting on a dock all Christmas time with a Yule log in our office.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's cool. So, let's see. I got a couple of things. And I don't think we talked about this last week. So, a while back, it must have been a year ago, Dorf sent me the Octa-Core Banana Pi M3. Now, some of the OSs they have for you to download and run work, and some do not. And Tor, did you point me to that there was a Diet Pi for it?
There was, but it wasn't official. I believe I did send you the link to like the forum posting with the developer version.
So there's one. I'm gonna like rub Diet Pi all over my body. I can't tell you how much I have mad IT love for Diet Pi. When crapped it, like, I'll try something on Raspberry Pi, it's not working, this doesn't, boom, Diet Pi works. It almost doesn't matter. Diet Pi fixes it. It's like the universal fix-all. There's a couple of reasons for the mad love. One, the Diet Pi, you know, it expands the file system, blah, you know, because I'll go through, I'm like, you know, I'll drop a new, it, I'm talking in sentence fractions. So, to me, in many ways, Pi devices are like virtual machines because I can just pull the micro SD and repurpose it for 10 minutes. And if I like it, keep it. If I don't like it, swap it back. And that's the great thing to me about, you know, being a IT infrastructure hacker programmer, whatever I am, having the ability to do that is just like come up with an idea. So I don't have any hardware. I could just shut that down and do it on this and see how it works. And if it does work good, boom, order new hardware and run it on that. Well, something happened with my M3 and I had to, you know, nuke and pave. And then I noticed anytime, so I'm running two things on it. One is Plex Media Server, and the other is I'm doing time capsule backups for the Macs in the house. And I would notice, I go to sleep to something in the background, you know, some audio. And I'll play Netflix or I'll play something. I don't watch it. I just hear this way. I'm not thinking. If I'm thinking, I won't sleep. So I got to have something to distract me. And I notice I get up in the morning and I see my time capsule backups didn't work. I'm like, what the heck? And I can't ping the server. And, you know, I got to power recycle it. Boom, it comes up. It works. And then the same thing next night. I'm like, aha, I see a pattern. Dor sent me the link for Diet Pi. Throw Diet Pi on. And it was an older version. It updated. You know, it took a little while. Boom, expand file system. Self-update. You know, in each time you log into it, USSH into it, it tells you your version 141, 142 came out. Would you like to update? It's like, F yeah, love you. It just absolutely great. Just so happy with that. And the other thing about the octa-core, and I think Dor and I heard the same thing from the same person, is, oh, it's not a real octa-core. There's, you know, four low-power cores or low-speed cores and four high-speed or high-power cores. And
yeah, I heard that from a bunch of people, a lot of people, and forum persons, and a bunch of places where everybody said the octa-cores are dual quad-core processors, four for low, four for high. It wasn't a true octa-core.
Okay, and I'm not going to say I know better than these people, but what I am going to say is when you run the CPU command in Diet Pi, it shows all four cores running, all four cores at the same clock speed.
All
eight cores. I'm sorry. Thank you. And also, when you do HTOP, you'll see different speeds, but you'll see all eight cores active. So I don't know. Look, I do know a chip designer, but I don't know if I'm going to bother him with a question about this. But from that, those monitoring the CPU command and HTOP, it does appear that all eight cores are active. I definitely didn't see, the lower four cores were running, and then it kicked in the top four cores. I did not see that kind of activity.
Yeah. I will say, it made sense, the four high, the four low, because that's how I know some phones do it. Mm-hmm. You know, so that made perfect sense to me.
For power consumption on a mobile device, absolutely. Makes 100% sense.
Well, and I can also see different operating systems configured to utilize them separately. I can picture there be an OS where they say, okay, these four are on the outside of the processor. Let's make them the low speed one. These are in the middle. Let's make and do something like that too. I do believe that the OS could determine how these chips are being used. But really quick for the uninitiated, the new listener, Diet Pi. Okay. If someone goes up to a car dealership, they have more than one type of car. They have more than one type of car for a reason. Every use case determines a different type of car. Some people need a minivan. Some people want a Lotus. Some people want a semi-truck. Some people want a scooter. There is no right one. They're all different. Same thing, in my opinion, with operating systems. And what DietPi is, it's the non-judgmental OS, because you can literally load it on nearly any device and then just do a quick snap installation of, at least that was like 20 or 30 different types of software that requires near zero effort just to get up stuff up and running to see what can work, what will work, how does this work, without having to figure out how to get it to work. If you go to dietpi.com, you can click on their software. You can see the list goes on and on of all the different software you can install.
Oh, and you know what? We could do about four or five shows and just skim the software. It's like an explanation. We could pick 10 pieces of software each show and just pretty much announce what they are and like a little bit dip our toe in the pool on how they work.
Yeah.
There's so many great things there. And if you're an IT geek and if you're a hardcore IT geek, and you know, it doesn't matter whether you're hardcore or not, there is something in there for you. And the great thing is it's a la carte. You pick whatever you want. Typically, what I'll pick is it comes with DropBear SSH. I want to go open SSH because I might want to do SFTP, and the DropBear won't do that. Or also, the DropBear doesn't do SCP. So if you're looking for that kind of functionality, you know, if you're in a Unix environment, a Linux environment, you're going to want to do SCP at one point.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, all right, first thing I do is I pick open SSH. And there's libraries for social media. And when they say social media, what they're talking about is different type of blog posting software, blog hosting software. Boy, there's BitTorrent. There's WeaveD, which works with RemoteIt, which allows you remote access, and you can pick the protocol. So you could SSH, you could FTP, you could VNC, you name it. You can configure it, and it's free, which is just stink cool.
So when you pick these things, though, you're not picking all this stuff and then building a zip file for you to install. This is after there's one download. Then after you get it going on your device, then that's when you pick and choose your options, right?
Yeah, correct. You're making menu selections. It's like the Chinese menu where you check, you know, one from this column, one from that column. You just go down in the ncurses, you know, GUI, you know, which as primitive as you can get GUI, and just select a bunch of items. Boom, that's what I want. Okay, install it. And, you know, however long later it takes, depending on your download speed and your CPU speed, it'll install.
I just downloaded the DietPi ARM for Raspberry Pi, and it took 1 minute. It's not like you're going to a freaky website with weird wait times to download it. Or
oh, you know what?
Right.
That's something you brought up, and this is kind of tangent. There are so many websites are unreadable. You don't know when, like, news. I'm a news junkie. You don't know when the news story ends. Like, the news story is about people responding in tweets, and I read the sentence, and I didn't realize I was ready to skip. I'm like, that's it? No, the tweets were part of the news story. I didn't realize that. I thought it was and then ads and, yeah, DietPi is nice and clean. I think they say, hey, our provider is this and blah, blah, blah. Also, it burns the image quick because I think the image is minimal. It's just enough to get an OS running and the menuing system up. You know, the ncurses menuing for you to place your order and specify what you want. So just mad love to DietPi. They rock.
Yeah. Oh, what I'll say really quick is Windows users, if you have never used Nynite, NINITE.com, go check it out. This will give you a perfect example of how this works. With Nynite, you go to the webpage, you click a whole bunch of boxes. Hypothetically, you want Java version 8, paint.net, Irfan View, Qt FTP, Vera antivirus. You want Emule. You want the AIM messenger. Give me iTunes. Give me VLC. And you just click all these boxes and then hit a button. You download a single exe. You click it. It installs everything for you. That's like what DietPi is, except for, yes, you install what is basically just the bare necessity OS to run in boot. Once you do, upon boot, it will then go through a menu, not pretty, and ask you, do you want to install these things? And these things literally list into the hundred, over 100 different things. And you basically just click, well, yes, I would like a web server. Why, yes, I would like a graphical desktop. Why, yes, I would like a graphical email client. You can just pick all these different things and then just say install, and it basically does the work for you.
That's pretty awesome. I love this.
Right now, I got to say, hey, all the glitters ain't gold. Nothing's perfect. This is not for everyone. If you use this and you take this operating system and you install stuff and then you put it into a real world production environment, you better do other stuff, because you're going to have to do stuff like change default passwords, change default ports. You're going to have to do a lot more work. Right. So this is not something that is designed to make people's jobs easier to set stuff up. This is a developer's sandbox in order to very quickly play, is the way I look at it.
Well, in the way I do it, my home network, it's segmented into a guest network and, you know, my family. So it's just me, my daughter, my wife on my network. So maybe I'm Bambi, but I'm not worried about my network security that way.
Yeah, same here. And same here. On my home network, if I don't emphatically trust my network, I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah.
I understand. I don't believe I have really any hardware news, except I did run the Aspen, A-Z-P-E-N, Remix Ultra Thin $89 laptop more than a couple times this week for, you know, trying to use it for like work. It wouldn't get through a full day of work. That to me, that's really heartbreaking, because I really want this device to succeed. So I can't use it, basically, because I'm not carrying around a charger with a barrel connector that sucks with what feels like a 6-inch cord.
Okay, so attached when it did to it. Have a charge, what's your second thoughts on?
My second thought is, it is the best bang for the buck hardware for under $100 I could even imagine in my life. The hardware is spectacular for that price. It isn't spectacular, but for that price, it's spectacular.
Have you cracked it open?
No. Because, you know, you don't know. And the Remix OS on it runs butter friggin' smooth, no problems. Similarly, the next month, February, is when everyone is saying that the Pine Book is going to go for sale for, coincidence, I think not, $89.
Isn't that nice? That's the something price tells point me, of new laptops.
No, something tells me it is literally virtually the exact same hardware as this book. Which is okay. That's not a bad thing. It's a good thing, because that price to me is a good price. Because I can see giving it to my kid to do stuff with. But I will say, I do have this desire to put actual Linux on it. And that just comes because I'm a Linux weenie.
Hopefully that'll come with a little better battery then, you know, possibly.
Well, you know, if it does, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I'm not going to go crazy.
So on hardware news, I got a question for Rich. I have not tried yet. Have you tried cracking the case on your dashes that came in the mail?
Oh yeah, no. I forgot about those.
Okay, I just wondered if you had, because just in the initial look at them, the build quality is pretty tight and a spudger.
Oh yeah,
I might have to. I don't have an iSesimo anymore. I don't know if any of my spudgers are going to hold up to this plastic.
Yeah, that's pretty heavy duty.
They actually do sell those where you can actually modify them.
I think they have a double A or triple A battery inside? Must be triple A.
Must be triple A. I will say another person to ask to inquire about this is Fide150.
Yeah.
AKA 5150. Because he actually pinged me and said that he did. He has his working doing something in his house. I can't remember. But he's also afraid that he's going to have, you know, 85X delivered to his door because he had to hit the button so many times before getting it completely working.
Well,
so you popped it open already?
One,
it stops you from doing that, though.
Exactly. You can only order one at a time.
I haven't cracked it open, but I have seen some teardown videos. I'm just holding a AA battery up next to it. A AA battery could fit in it.
Oh, okay.
It would definitely.
It says that work. It gives you a warning that the what is it? It is a lithium ion battery.
No user serviceable parts inside.
It gives you that warning.
So couple of things. One, when you go through the registration process with the smart button, you just stop before it says what product you want to order. The other thing I did is I grabbed the MAC address and I said, block this from going out to the internet.
Yeah.
Nice. Good thought.
Yeah. But what I do see is I guess because I'm running the Amazon app on my phone and it's running in the background, is whenever I push the button, it shows up on my phone. It says, hey, you haven't completed the registration process. Would you like to finish that?
Oh, in your app?
Yes. Yeah, on the app on the phone.
Okay.
So I'll get a notification pop up.
Very cool.
So one more hardware related news I have. The motherboard went bad in my Nexus 5X yesterday.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about.
So I bought it through Google, through Project Fi, and called them. Well, I didn't call them. I had to. Oh no! How did I get? Yeah,
they called you.
I went on the website for Project Fi, and they called me. And their next day, and me a new one. I still had 32 or 36 days left in the warranty, so we're good.
Actually, better break the next one before the warranty works. Yeah,
well, here's the thing: the next one is refurbished with a 90-day warranty, not new with another year. So, I don't know. It's a known issue. I guess LG had a couple different phones with this motherboard problem where it just corrupts the memory on there. The RAM goes bad. I don't know. It's odd because they said something about overheating, and I'd literally taken it out of its case that it's been in since day one. I took it out of its case for a couple days, and that's when it happened.
Well, I'm sorry, Eric, but you've obviously read too much fake news or something, because it's not a known problem with LG. I'm pretty sure it was Russians.
Russian
hacking? Yeah. Russians hacked your phone. Was your password for your email account password?
Yeah. Well, I did have to reset that recently, yeah.
See, I always set mine to DrowSap. Oh,
I don't care.
Eric, did I tell you when I was in Louisiana, the tax collector was from Nigeria? He wasn't a Nigerian prince. Do I have to tell you the rest of the story?
There's so much wrong with that.
Right. Really quick, because I'm going to forget if I don't say. I do have a link in the notes for the Pine book, a really couple things that, you know, is going to be sold next month, I believe. $89 for the 11.6-inch model, $99 for the 14-inch model. So with the other one, the Asbin, there's only one size, I believe 11.6, same kind of form factor. I might get the 14-inch version just because it's better.
There's no touchscreen, is there?
No, I'm sure it's not touchscreen. But here's the thing. I took that Asbin, I forgot, around my floor at work and let people see it. The most knowledgeable PC people on the floor commented on how they thought the touchpad on that cheap $89 device was awesome. And that's because the touchpad is actually textured, almost like, I don't want to say snake skin or whatever, but it was a little bumpy. So as you were touching that, you knew you were touching that touchpad. On a lot of other touchpads, on a lot of other computers, it's the same smoothness as the rest of the laptop. Yeah. So sometimes you tap and you look down, you're not even on the touchpad.
Seems like years ago a couple companies used to do that. Maybe HP or something had textured touchpads, if I remember right.
That, and I think Lenovo old ThinkPads had a different texture on the touchpads. But also, here's some of the specs for this Pine 64 Pine book. A 64-bit quad-core ARM Cortex A53 1.2 gigahertz processor. That's almost standard in a lot of these things. 2 gig of DDR3 RAM. Again, that's good, but that's almost standard kind of things. Dual-core MAL 400 MP2 graphics. I don't remember dual-core on a lot of them, so that might be different. 16 gig eMMC, which it's nice to have, good to have. Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. They don't say what versions, but I'm sure... I hope they're better versions. 1.3 webcam, 10,000 milliamp battery. 10,000 milliamp battery. That better make it go through all day. Of course, it will be manufactured in China, where the company is based. It says a limited 90-day warranty, so just like your phone.
I wonder if...
So what OS?
Remix OS.
I wonder if the 14-inch would have a bigger battery, both because it's going to need it with a bigger screen, and also it has more room for one. Being larger.
I hope so. Really quick, with Pine stuff, I'm 99% sure you can load any of their Pine OSs on there. Pine 64 is one of the few hardware manufacturers with a true relationship with Remix OS. So you'll be able to load, I'm pretty sure, Remix, Android, Ubuntu, Debian, maybe even Fedora if you want.
So do I blow the $89 on this and throw the MSI Wind out that I have?
Tempted to say yes, just because it has more RAM than your MSI Wind.
No, I got 2 gigs on the RAM.
Oh, okay, faster RAM then. It's not DDR3.
Right. Holy cow. So 14-inch, I mean, that's a real reasonable size. Because I run around with a 15-inch, and for me to go down to a 14 wouldn't be bad. My daughter got the 13-inch MacBook Pro, and she's happy with that. And 14 is a real good size. I'll tell you, all I think about this is I have a Toshiba Thrive. It's a 10-inch tablet. And the reason I have it is really for charting while flying. And I'm like, dude, if these guys make a 10 or a 14-inch tablet, that'd be killer.
Yeah, definitely work.
Hey, MSI Wind is physically much larger, right? And you don't have like a VGA cable coming out of this.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
The MSI Wind's like a
netbook. Yeah. It's one of the first generation netbooks. Not an Asus EEE, but right there.
I got one of them sitting here somewhere.
I got one of them sitting right by my feet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was
the original.
Yeah, actually, it's got full-size RJ45 SD card slot, audio mic. I was running with the 2 gigs of RAM. I was running like an XP VM on this. You know, at the time, it was pretty reasonable. And I was dual booting into Snow Leopard.
Nice. I don't remember why I don't remember the Wind. I was really into the netbooks. But never really paid money for any. I was intrigued by them until they started coming into the shop, and I realized I didn't want one.
Well,
they're very beefy.
To be my 2012 MacBook Pro Retina has had a number of failures, hardware failures, whereas I don't know if this was like in $2012, it was either $2,200. I think it was $2,200. I got the one step down from the top of the line. And because I think the top of the line was $2,600, so I paid whatever. Anyhow, for the Wind, I think it was $260, $360. I have taken no care whatsoever with those things. I have had not one breakdown failure problem with it at all. I've got two of them. I bought one for me and one for my wife/daughter to use. And I have them in my desk here. And originally, I had them to write SD cards.
You might freak some listeners out by saying wife/daughter. I'm just
oh, yeah. Well, they were sharing
Florida.
It.
Thank you.
Two my different wife people. And daughter two shared
two different
the
people.
Same.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
So, thank you for keeping the G rating of the show. So, now that I lost my freaking train of thought.
They're sharing the computer. Yeah, just further emphasize. And yeah, they're built like a to last because mine as well. I've dropped this thing. I've treated it like dirt. And my Asus EEE, the original 7-inch model, it still boots and still works.
My EEE has a crack on the screen that physically doesn't affect it at all. You just look right around it. There's all you see is a little like a hair, but it's literally black. There's no other laptops that I have owned that have cracked the screen and just kept working just fine.
No, not the ones that I know.
And I'm kind of annoyed because I really want a reason to get rid of it. And I hate to say it. So in my desk here, and I don't know why these items are in my desk. My wife and daughter.
Well, I think I see where you're going. Rich, but let me just 1 second before you know, you could be starting this little older PC museum kind of thing, but you got to take the flower stickers off of the MSI Wind first.
Well, that was my wife and daughter's one. Yeah. So, and my daughter on her Nook, she has all of the like pink duct tape, art on it.
Nice.
So I still have color Nooks that I rooted and, you know, they're running CyanogenMod. And I don't want to get rid of them because they work fine. I mean, the batteries are a little, lame. Yeah. But here's a device that still works 100%. And I did break out my 10-inch Toshiba Thrive. I pulled it out of my flight bag, and I was using it to run the Octopi as the UI for the Octopi. So instead of carrying around my laptop, you know, like just walk over there with the tablet. And you know what? It's getting long in the tooth. It's not that good.
Yeah, I forgot my Asus EEE has a full-size Ethernet, full-size USB 2.0, headphone and mic, two more USB 2.0, microSD, VGA. But the weird thing is it has another port right next to the Ethernet port that I'm guessing maybe was a possible modem.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's probably a knockout for a modem. You probably have a socket on the motherboard for a modem.
So it shows you how old
this is. Okay, I lied. The one I have, I must have had something else. It's an Aspire 1 from Acer.
I remember those.
Same disease.
Yeah.
Different kind of...
Fine devices.
Oh, yeah. So the title of this podcast is Netbook Memories. I'm glad I tuned in tonight.
I wonder what the Russians are hacking.
I've been wondering what these guys had for old netbooks laying around.
So I'll bring you back to mini PC. I do have the data center in a backpack, so I do VMware consulting, and I go around with a Celeron NUC with a 500 gig SSD and 8 gigs of RAM, and a i5 Gen 6 NUC with 32 gigs of RAM and 250 gig SSD, and that is my VMware lab. And so the company I work for consulting wise, my, you know, the one that writes me the check, I go into their lab today and I can't get in. You know, lab's down. So I go over to my backpack. I broke out, you know, the nooks, fired them up, and, you know, I'm able to, because I need to test some configuration scripts that I'm going to be doing on a client's network, and I want to test them before I present them to the client.
Good plan.
Yeah. I love the idea of having suitable hardware, literally, you can fit in your backpack that even 4 or 5 years ago would have been multi-thousands of dollars.
Just give the dollar numbers on that. The Celeron NUC, and I'm just running an NFS server. I'm running Open Media Vault with NFS, and I'm running DNS on it also. The NUC itself was like 120. The 8 gigs of RAM, I think, was less than $30. And the 500 gig drive was like 120. So we're talking 240, 270 for, you know, a file server. And I think it was just under 600 I got from Amazon, and I took out the credit card at the time, so I got a little bit of a discount. So I got 32 gigs of RAM, an i5 Gen 6 NUC, and 250 gig SSD for, if I remember right, it's $585.
Yeah, it was less than six. I remember you saying. Which, that right there blows away most people's laptops or desktops they have at their house.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's what got me into the whole concept of thin client. And the only reason the upboard, because realistically, I would use the upboard on my two monitors here and keyboard as a thin client and just use that to spin up VMs that I need in the background. It's just that the upboard doesn't have two monitor ports.
Yeah. Yeah. And we did look, do some looking into this. There, it is possible to get USB 2.0 or 3.0 into a video output as well as a second output for video. But everything I saw about it in Linux, more than likely, all it's going to do is mirror the monitors. So you're not going to have two distinct monitors. They're going to be the same damn thing. Windows, with the right software, you might be able to get an extended desktop, but I don't know how well that would work.
It works well. You could do it on Windows easily.
Okay, well, as Monty Python would say, now for something completely different. we talked in this show a lot about taking the mini computers and turning it into more desktop-like experiences. And we've talked about Atrix laptops in the past, and all the other incarnations that have came out of it. Nextbook was the one that I believe they did at least partially ship. I don't know if they completely ever shipped. The idea is you have a prettier laptop. You open up the laptop. There's nothing in it. There's no computer in it. You connect it to an external source, whether a Raspberry Pi or a phone, and then you have yourself a laptop-like experience. Here's another one online, 345 in the notes. Sorry, not 349 in the notes. 347 in the notes. Over at Lil Putin, which is one of my favorite sites, period, to go to. They showed and they talked about it. And okay, I like the fact that it's French. It's another country getting into this. Good. Yes, good, good. Competition, good. More people doing it, good. And then I start looking at it and I start reading down, and they're literally insane. They're charging way too much. The default, the launching price was 299 euros, which is over $350 for what is essentially a laptop without a motherboard in it.
Oh, ouch, so you have to have a Windows 10 phone?
Yeah, and pretty much I went to Costco and bought my wife a Windows 10 laptop for, I think, $400 and change, that is. So that violates a couple of my rules for purchasing. One, you know, I always do the ROI. You know, what's the return of investment? What's the lifespan of this device? How useful is it going to be to me? And then the other part is, like, Dori posted about that MiFi. So there's a MiFi with a 2 terabyte drive. But what was the price on that? It was like
$1,135, I believe.
All right, so that's a for instance where, do you know what? If I pay myself $10 an hour, $1,000 buys me a lot of time, and that's what I charge me for my time. Is whatever I do has to be, I have to be able to justify that I could pay me $10 an hour to do, and it would be a good ROI. That's one of those things. I definitely could do it for, what's MiFi cost? $50? What's 2 terabyte SSD cost? Is that like $200? $300?
Yeah.
So for $350, I could, and then I could buy a battery and a wall wart, and so that'd be like another $50.
Right.
And I could print a case.
Well, and you can buy a 3D printer.
Oh, yeah, right. Right.
$99.
Yeah, right. My 3D printer was $153 with $24 shipping. Yeah, and I could pay me $10 an hour to do the work.
Right. Well, and dare I say, it wouldn't be a product from, I believe it was Linksys, I want to say. Let me see if I can find this out real quick. I believe it was, no, it was Link, a company called Link, which I will say, the difference is, Rich then can be an administrator, apply his own system updates, and know about his own vulnerabilities and not rely on a company he's never heard of before to do these things for him. Yeah, that was an insane price. Hopefully, literally, it comes down in price, because I would love it if it was competitive.
Right.
All right. I'm going to do the gripe of the week. I have a 2015 Genesis Coupe, Hyundai Genesis Coupe. It's the ultimate version. So when you get the ultimate version, could you tell me what you think that means?
Heated and cooled seats.
Fully loaded.
Heated,
it's
got to
be fully loaded.
Fully loaded.
No, I'll say.
Brembo brakes,
no.
you know, nav, this, no. That. It's, you know, all that stuff, right?
No. My logic is it might have different color trim, and on the back it has an extra piece of metal next to the model number.
That says, I paid more than you did. So I'm jonesing for my wife has a 2010 Jetta, and her radio croaked, which apparently is a common thing in the VW, and I myself wired in a was it JVC, anyhow, it does Apple CarPlay, and she has an iPhone, so you know, the Apple CarPlay, I got to tell you, even though my car has maps and it does a lot of good things with the maps, I really like. But punching in an address, I pulled my hair out. That's why I'm bald. I want to be able to talk to my stupid phone, say, okay, Google, hey.
Oh,
go
you
here.
Said the word.
If you said something just now, I didn't hear it.
You know, I had my old phone in my glove box doing the Android Auto, turned on Wi-Fi, and then on my normal day-to-day phone, I have it in the car mount, and I have tethering turned on. I love the fact that I can just say, okay, Schmoogle, navigate to, and say whatever, yeah. And it just goes there. The idea of typing in, no.
With crazy excitement. Oh, and my car does voice, you know, input. But I can't say go to AutoZone. It says the library. And I'm like,
it's frustrating.
Cancel. So with much excitement, I Google and I see 2015 and 2016 Genesis coupes have Android Auto and Apple CarPlay enabled. You know, download the, I go and it says, oh, but not the ultimate versions.
What? That's like, not fair. Come on. Hence the word ultimate.
Long story to dovetail into, when you buy the product and walk out the door, you get no more support, no more updates.
They already have your money.
Your phone, your TV, that $2,000 refrigerator with a 21-inch touchscreen on it, you are not getting any more support. The Russians are going to hack your refrigerator. Right. You are not going to get the door open anymore. You're hosed.
Right, but also, like you said two or three episodes ago, if a product claims something,
it isn't.
Now,
so the pro version. So you're saying my ultimate version of my car isn't the ultimate version of my car?
You are.
I don't know if that's true with the Tesla, though. It seems like they're always getting updates and changing things.
Yeah, I know. What's going on with them? Touche.
Yeah, but
Teslas are just called Tesla S. That's it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, Tesla's a different model. I mean, that's a different marketing sphere completely. And that's the thing that drives me crazy. I'm very happy with my Asus router. I got the RT68U. I guess it's 3 years old now from when I purchased. Rock solid. I think it updated over the summer. Getting product updates. Happy about that. But when you're not the administrator of your device, when you haven't manufactured it, in, you know, when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about like a Pi, installed it, configured it. If you do not have root access to it and can't configure it, it's dead. It is a dead end of life product.
Yeah. To me, it's sunsetted. It just, you can still see the light coming from where the sun set. It's just a question of how long you're going to see it, I think. And with all those devices now, I'm firmly believing I need to create a second network and isolate everything I don't completely control and put that on a separate network, including the wife's Roku.
No, I agree. I fully agree with that. That's a good statement.
Well, okay. I was having a conversation with Joe Heck today, and Joe talked about a couple of interesting things, and I'm getting more Linux-y than anything on this, but we're talking about Ubuntu, and I gave my daughter my old MacBook Pro, which was a unibody, and I just put Ubuntu on it. And Joe mentioned that Luna OS, what's the parent company name? Because Luna was the particular version.
You mean elementary?
Yes. Elementary, yeah, elementary IO. He's like, oh, I like it. I'm like, well, I don't like it. And I said, I don't like it because Luna was 1404, and it took them forever to come out with 1604, and there was no upgrade path.
Yeah.
And he said he's really liking the new version. I forget the name of it, but it's 1604. And he said he likes it because apparently Ubuntu's got a lot of telemetry going on. It's phoning home on a lot of stuff. And the Luna is not, or the 1604 version of it is not. And he actually said he might roll his own distro. That he would add a couple of more, you know, Ubuntu-like features back into it because it's not phoning home, but it doesn't have all of those hands-on things that you want to be at, and roll his own OS, which, again, that's the ultimate administrator. If you're rolling your own OS, you're in complete control. You control the updates. Yeah. You control.
Wait, what kind of things are they missing?
Really quick, Podbuntu was a thing. I rolled my own. It means nothing. The question is do you actually take a accountability and responsibility for the repos, or do you leave the repos going to the elementary ones? Because if you do, then it means nothing. All you're doing is skinning the OS. Mm-hmm. If you really want to be responsible for it, you literally have to basically clone the repos and maintain them yourself. And that's the kind of thing I don't encourage anybody to do unless you have a lot of time.
Or a lot of help.
A lot of help, yeah. But, and I'm with Joe about the feeling of the Luna OS. I don't like how GNOME is removing features and removing abilities and removing, they're dumbing, I hate saying this term. They're windowing the Linux desktop. They're trying to dumb it down so anybody, quote unquote, can use it. And that's what the real goal was with Windows 8 and Windows 10 changes. They're trying to dumb it down. I feel like that's what elementary OS is doing as well. But with that said, there's something about it that I really do like, and I don't know what it is. I mean, rolling your own distro, that can be obsessive work involved. And everyone knows Ubuntu's role calling home. What I'll be interested to know is, if I install, and I install the minimal version or the server edition, it's basically the server edition with even less in it, the minimal version, and then I put my Xorg on it and my own desktop on it, I would hope, because I'm not running the Unity desktop, mine would then be calling home less, but I would firmly expect it to be calling home at least some, just because it's in their best interest.
So it looks, I mean, if I look at elementary, it looks very OS X like with the bar at the bottom.
Yes.
What kind of things is Joe thinking that's missing that did you guys talk about that?
Yeah, just very topically, that going along the more modern OS is the Windows and the Macs, a lot of stuff is obfuscated and tougher to get at and control. And he wanted to put back some of that type of control that you have in a real Unix, a real Linux, not what I say where all the OSs are going, but he didn't specifically name things, but just quick head nod, and yeah, that's, I gotcha.
Yeah, to me, that's like GNOME in general. All GNOME desktops that I've used, they're slowly removing stuff and trying to simplify is the nicest word I can come up with, simplifying the interface to where when you try to do something advanced, it requires a hell of a lot of work.
Yeah, I don't see why they can't just leave it there, bury it in some, bury it, so you don't see it ever. You don't want people to hardly ever see it, but.
Well, and they're taking out stuff because it's easier to maintain. The less complex of a machine you have, the easier it is to perform updates and modify.
I'm new to Ubuntu GNOME, and I'm loving it. I don't know what I was missing, but.
Which Debian ticks me off because the Netatalk libraries are never in it.
The what libraries?
Netatalk, it's the networking that Apple uses for the time capsule.
Well, yeah, Debian is Debian. Debian always does things the way Debian wants to do things. It is the only distribution in existence that is truly controlled by a community of individuals.
Did I talk about this last week about compiling Netatalk?
Not on the show. You did talk to me about it, but on the show.
So, now I'm not going to remember which OS was what. But what I did do is one OS on a Pi, I was able to compile the Netatalk. I think it was on the Ubuntu Mate, and I wasn't able to compile it with DiaPi. Oh, and I'm taking away from some of that love. And what I was able to do was pull, because it's ARM-based and it's Debian on the base, just pull the .deb files from the microSD card and put them on, run them, and it installed. So while I compiled it under another Debian, I was able to pull it in and run it and install it. So I was pretty excited about that because it was going to work.
That's cool. That's like the shell game, switching bait and switch at the last second. Just changing the source. And that's one of the beautiful things I'll say about Linux is a lot of the different OS's distributions under the hood are more similar than they let on.
I tell you what, I'm a recent convert over the last year. I mean, I've played with Linux for years, but it's my everyday driver now, and I can't be happier, really.
Well, I'll just say that something happens and you have to open up a PC repair shop again, Eric. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to fix things on Windows when you're not using it every day. Yes, that's all I'm saying.
Well, 4 years from now, there probably won't be Windows, so we'll be okay for a while.
Come on, all of those ATMs running XP.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I got a little Windows story. So what I've been up to these past couple of days is hammering the Azul, my Azul mini PC. Mm-hmm. So I ended up getting a USB, Xbox 360 game controller. It's like $20. And I ended up connecting to my Xbox One via Wi-Fi, and I was able to play games like Watch Dog, Arkham, with Breeze.
I think you've talked about this the last two shows. Just give us the thumbnail. The Azul is
so
what?
Yeah. The Azul is the it's a compact mini PC, fits in the palm of your hand. It's got AC Wi-Fi. It's got I believe 10/100 Ethernet. USB 3.0.
Now, was that the $150 stick?
No, this was the desktop model, and I believe it was a little bit
over. The sandwich size model?
It was a little bit over $150. I think it was like $169 or $189. Yeah. But I actually did the same thing with the stick model, the HDMI stick model.
So where's my question? So essentially, you're playing your Xbox games on that. Through that device.
You're running them on the Xbox like screen downstairs mirroring. And streaming them through a device upstairs. So you could have maybe like two Xboxes or an Xbox in two spots.
Well,
and it was playing good.
It was playing flawless. And that's why I drew my jaw hit the floor. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is wireless we're talking about. It didn't skip a beat.
And it's a mini computer. I mean, I believe the Steam Streamer. Yeah. Because they have the dedicated hardware to stream games through Steam. I believe that was more than $100, possibly.
Yeah, maybe. They just actually it was just on sale last week for like $20. I was surprised, but yeah,
$20.
I had no idea what it was for, so I didn't buy one.
Dang!
So
for that price, you just buy it to buy.
So what I did was, you know, I said, okay, this is working pretty good. Now it's got the Atom. I can't remember the name of the processor. I think it's an Atom processor. Yeah, quad core processor.
You know, like the Z800. It was what we heard in a lot of different.
Yes,
devices.
Yes. So I have a 2-in-1 tablet by the company. It's a Chinese manufacturer by the name of Chewy. It's a Chewy 12-inch tablet, 2-in-1, and then it's a quad core processor, USB 3.0, USB 2.0 supports on it. So I ended up getting that, plugging the game controller into that. And kind of doing the same thing. It's got Windows 10 dual boot into Android 6.0. So I booted it up into Windows 10, connected to the Xbox 360, ended up streaming games through that. It hiccuped a little bit in the beginning, but after that, flawless.
Wow. See, that to me is really impressive for the price. And I will say I was completely wrong. The Steam Link, which is their streaming hardware, is $50, not $100. So essentially, you bought a couple of these pieces of dedicated hardware, and you're able to stream and do your normal desktop functions.
Exactly. I think it does. I actually enjoy it more of a streaming game, you know, using it for playing games than actually surfing the web. I mean, it plays good audio and video and stuff like that too. Don't get me wrong. It does mm-hmm. great for movies and whatnot, but. I really enjoy playing the game.
So, Brian, does either of them have a SATA port?
They do not. I'm thinking about it. No, they don't.
Wow, now I'm looking at that Steam Link. You can use that to stream an Xbox One also. For $20, that would have been nice, well, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Rich, on these kind of devices, the best case scenario is you might get eSATA. Ports.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like everything seems to be going just straight USB 3.0.
Because, you know, like my portable data center, not like I'm going to replace it's mental exercise. I'm not going to replace my Celeron Nook, which is my NFS server. But I'm like, you know, what would be a suitable NFS server replacement in the mini PC world?
I'm sure it could be a couple things I'll say.
But we're batting around the idea of the Odroid XU4, and you know there's a couple of devices I'm real interested to get my hands on. And when is the Upboard Squared coming out?
April, I believe, is the earliest, but I believe most of them are going to ship till March. I mean, March, April.
It'll be here soon enough. But it's just like, just for the mad love, I'm saying mad love a lot, that I have for the upboard, that upboard square is going to rock.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Can't wait to print the case for it. Print the case with the vase mount so it fits on the back of my monitor.
Right. Very cool.
Hey, go ahead, Dor.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I added an item to the list here. Was it 350? Straight from, hot off the press from CES. Added it yesterday.
Yeah, I think we'll have a lot of stuff to talk about next week, even though I won't. Yeah. I probably won't be here. I may not be.
This is the Lenovo 500 multimedia controller. And the reason why I added it is because, you know, I'm not really a big fan of these small keyboard controllers. Just because of the travel size for the keys, that just, I don't know, something about them really doesn't sit right with me too well. I'd rather have a good size keyboard. I think we mentioned a few of them on the show before, with the actual trackpad along with the keyboard attached to it. Yeah. But for this particular one, it's got touch. It's touch sensitive, so you can actually drag your fingers across the actual keys.
I like that.
Yeah, and you can manipulate the actual OS that you're using.
Yeah, so that's like the BlackBerry, and yes, I said BlackBerry. Ooh. One of their latest phones with a physical keyboard on it does a very similar function, where the entire set of keys also has some touch capabilities on it, which is one of those things I think anybody using it for the very first time is going to take a second to get used to it, but then once you get used to it, something tells me it actually works really good. The only thing I don't like about the keyboard is that the keys are directly above the other keys, which is kind of unnatural most of the time. Keys are offset just a little bit. My old Nokia N900 internet tablet, did that as well. And it did take just a little bit to get used to it. But once you got used to it, it did, you know, work just fine. I'm a fan of Lenovo, period. So here's the dumb question. How much do you think this thing is going to cost?
Yeah, I'm not seeing a price here.
Because I'm going to say, I would hope 40 or less.
Yeah, I was thinking 30 or 40. That was my guess.
Yeah. Now, here we go. The expected cost coming in March is $54 US and 44 pounds.
That's MSRP, so hopefully within, you know, a couple months, it drops.
Yeah.
Very cool. And honestly, it looks like it fits good in the hand because you don't want the keys to be, or the thing to be too small. But it looks like a good thumb keyboard kind of thing. Very cool. And it looks really small.
Smart thinking. Just the right size. I guess it's just a matter of time. I'd like it when engineers come up with something new like that, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
A gyroscopic mouse. That's what they're calling it.
A gyroscopic mouse. Well, so that means you would tilt it up and down and left and right, because like a gyro mouse. Also. I would rather it be the way you just, it shows that you're sliding your fingers across it too. So yeah, the gyro mouse is nice. I used to use one, you know, quite a bit. My take along wireless mouse was the gyro mouse for a while. And it takes some getting used to. It's nice, but I guess if you want to, you know, page up real quick, and especially if you're doing presentations, the gyro mouse works really nice. When you're giving, and the keyboard would be nice enough. It's small enough you could keep it in one hand down by your side and manipulate a cursor up on the screen too if you're giving a presentation.
No, I agree.
Without having two hands on a thing. Hey, I can't wait to see what else is coming from CES this week.
Yeah, I've been checking yesterday and earlier this afternoon. I know that Samsung had their press conference. Not much.
No,
it wasn't really loud.
Did it have a lot of fires in the presentation, like, you know, pyrotechnics going off on both sides of the speaker and things?
They should have. No.
Joey Zuzu.
Well, they had the they do really great displays. So they had the quantum dot television, which is supposedly taking the place of the OLED display. So as you know, OLED displays fade over time because it's an organic display. So through the longevity of the product, this is what I'm hearing. I don't really have an OLED display to say yay or nay on this, but reds tend to get a little pinkish. So with the quantum dot, you don't have that problem any longer.
All the OLED displays I've had were on phones, and they were beautiful from the day I got it to the day I gave it to somebody else to have. But I'll take your word for it. And I suppose that you'd probably see more of anything wrong on, like, a television.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, do you guys got anything else before we wrap up the show? All right. Well, like I said, next week I'll be on the road. I think I got a 5 or 6 hour drive. So I don't know. I'll be in a hotel. I don't know what the Wi-Fi situation or internet situation will be. So I'm not sure if I'll be here or not. I'll definitely take the rig with me to see how that goes. But I can't say for. Ooh, hey, and I'll be back on Windows then, won't I? Shoot.
Yeah, I guess you will. Hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm actually going to do the show on the mini PC to see if I can pull that off.
All right. Test in a live environment, man. What can go wrong?
Yeah, right?
All right. Well, Happy New Year's to everybody listening, and we'll see you guys next week.